This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm here with a guest from UK. Tom, could you please tell us a little bit yourself and about your company, and welcome to SaaS Scaled.
Cool. Thanks, Armon. Yeah, really great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on. So a little bit about me, for pushing over 20 years in sales and business now. Background in running high growth like sales teams, and had a couple of exits on that side. Then for the last pushing like over eight years now, been running my own startup called Jiminy. What we do is we're a revenue intelligence provider. So we record, transcribe, and analyze like video, voice, and email. Obviously, it didn't start that way. It's evolved over time, but we basically help like go to market teams understand and the insights from their calls and meetings to make better decisions.
Fantastic. For any SaaS company, regardless of what they do, one of the most important thing, of course, is sales, right? As we know, you know, if you are not really able to sell fast enough and expand and have a good go-to-market strategy that, you know, you land enough customers in a short period of time, that may not lead to building a good subscription business, because the subscription business needs bringing new customers, sustaining and retaining the existing customer, and all of them within a short period of time in order to be extremely successful. How do you feel about, you know, the biggest challenges that SaaS companies have based on what you have observed in the market, and how, you know, you see the sales differently in a subscription business and SaaS model versus the old-fashioned way?
I think a lot's changed over the last couple of years, right? The market's inconsistent. I'd say SaaS almost went through a recession after the boom in like sort of post-COVID or around COVID time. I've got a kind of theory on this, you know. A lot of them are nice to haves. Yeah, they're not needs to have. So, for example, could I cope with a spreadsheet instead of this tool? Could I cope with that? A lot of the time, you're right, sales is number one. It can be the lifeblood of the business. When sales is good, you can solve any other problem. But you have to get every element right. And I think there's obviously your churn and your NRR is probably as more important, as if not equally important, as the other. You can't have a healthy performing business if you don't get all of those metrics right. But I don't think it's a software wide problem. Is like, how does SaaS evolve to give you outcomes so you can make decisions? You know, it's very easy to see surface level ROI, but what is the ROI that I'm really getting for my business that helps me be successful? Anything that's gone public, I mean, 80-20 rule, I think, is a database. So Salesforce, Monday.com, you know, HubSpot, what is the database? Anything on the outside has never been as successful. So that, read into that what you will. And there's many great companies that have got to many good numbers. And but yeah, I think no one's cracked it in my view, because the ones that have cracked it are just the platform. kind of the platform, you could argue, probably isn't the future either. So I think it's a new way. We're very early now in terms of what technology will do and how it will perform. It's a lot to unpack there, but you get
sure
what I mean.
No, but that's a good point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, great point. Essentially, you brought up a very interesting point that you have seen a lot of success in SaaS when it comes to database business, meaning people collect data and they need a place to really bring all of that data into one place. And that's definitely a necessity. And you have seen a lot of good companies growing there in that area. But after you have the data stored, or during that process, while as a SaaS company, what other things do you think would be a necessity, not necessarily a vitamin, but it would be a painkiller outside just putting the data into a database?
Yeah, look, a lot of what we've evolved is like, how can we be like AI within the CRM? So I think people want to do less with more, but also in terms of like not have multiple places to go, no matter what level of the business they're in. Mm-hmm. But look, you could have all the AI in the world, but if you don't mm-hmm. do anything with the data, nothing in your business fundamentally changes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think we're very good at human beings as like jumping onto the next thing and not solving the other one. So you could go through, I don't know, big data was a thing back when I first started in business. Mm-hmm, do you remember? Mm-hmm. And then, yeah. You know, like moving to the cloud, and now you got AI. Yeah. But everyone's banging on about generative AI, but people are still manually logging shit in the CRM. So have we actually solved the previous problem, or are we just running onto the next new shiny thing? Which I think in startups and scale-ups, we're very good at. I still think there's some problems along the journey that will and need to be solved, you know, along the way. But going back to my other point is trying to help companies, like, how do you help improve someone? How do you make something better? How do you make a decision as a team with the tools and the data that you have? You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you are raising a very good point that the basics are the basics. And if you are not solving that fundamental problem and you are not building a good foundation, other things are just shiny, you know, objects you are going after. You are not going to be able to solve your problem, because the foundation, the base, still is not that solid. And the base for everything that a SaaS company does is data. So if they don't have a good data in place, even if they have the best AI in place, it's not going to help them. So first, they need to have a foundation that is a good data foundation. Do I understand it correctly, or you meant something else?
Yeah, I think they need that. I mean, look, I think where business, like, if every business was hitting its number all the time, then mm-hmm. you know, people would be a lot more successful. So constantly businesses go up and down. I think people make a lot of assumptions on averages, and a lot of the data that people look at is quite binary, like yes, no, black, white, you know, green, mm-hmm. red. So I think, you know, why generative AI is exciting is because you can take that unstructured data and start to understand the structured data historically is only as good as what goes in, which has been mm-hmm. pretty much garbage because we rely on humans to do it, and humans are bad at being consistent, again, generally. So that's not good. But if you can take better structured data, which runs on some sort of semi-autonomous way, and then mm-hmm. you can take the unstructured data, then I think you can start to get answers. So that's the bit that's probably more exciting, is like, you know, a finance team's looking at a pricing strategy. Are they looking at historic things? What are they guessing they could sell it in the future? What the enterprise sales team might say? Or are they actually really understanding what customers are saying and then using that to, you know, decide on their pricing strategy for the following year? You know, how, you know, I think a lot of the time we're guessing, you know, it doesn't matter what size company. Mm-hmm.
And if you, when you start with a company, you have worked with many companies, that they are, and they have been backed by investors, and you work with those mm-hmm. companies, and then you know, sometimes when you look at those companies, the investors come in and looking at the company and they want to optimize it, fine tune it, and make it more profitable. And when you look at them, where are the places that are usual suspects from your perspective? You normally look at those areas, the top five areas, the top three areas that you look at them and you see, probably I might first start from here to see how optimized these businesses are.
Are you talking about from like someone coming in to make it more profitable or to make it grow faster?
Well, I think most investors, you're right. I mean, if it's a growth investor, then they want it to grow faster. If it's more a private equity kind of thing, they want to make increasing the profit. But that's a good point. Let's just think about whatever, you know, your experience is mostly around that. If it's more about maximizing the profit or it's more about maximizing the growth.
Yeah, look, I think, like I said to you before we came on air, it's very hard to give it a broad brush because every business is different, every vertical is different, every space is different. So some companies need a lot of cash really quickly. Some need more dollars than others. So people have to do what's right for their business and their space. Look, I think the quicker you get in the, what do you call it, in the black? Yeah, that's the right way around. The better, the more in control you are of your business, the better decisions you can make for your customers and for your employees. Because then you can think with a more infinite mindset. So the day you get on the hamster wheel of raising money and running out of cash, most companies don't get off, is the reality, I think, at some point. Of course, some get acquired and, you know, some get, but I think you end up on this infinite, like wheel of raising money, running out of money, raising money, running out of money. So, yeah, look, I think if, businesses can be, look, businesses were designed to be profitable. It's a new thing for them to like spend money and burn money. So, and again, I'm saying there are some businesses that absolutely should do that and it's the right thing for them. But I think there's more businesses that probably should not than should.
No, that's a fantastic point. Having said that, when we are talking about SaaS and you're talking about subscription business, by nature, we are really lowering the deal size in comparison with asking like the old-fashioned model that was perpetual model or selling really the software license rather than subscription license. In that case, you are lowering actually the deal size because you are just selling the subscription, but then you are trying to build a more valuable business by having subscribers that come back to you and every year they pay the subscription versus every quarter, every year you have to go and find brand new customers. Otherwise, the sales goes to zero almost. In that case, the subscription business by nature is harder to build, but when you build it and make it profitable, it's higher value. So some entrepreneurs feel like in the SaaS world, they feel like we are in a position that we are building a SaaS and subscription business. And in that case, it takes us longer to really get to the point that we are profitable. If at the same time we have to be cash positive very quickly and build a successful subscription business, is it the right plan in long run for that business? So we should have enough runway to get there. How would you say, to a subscription business from profitability perspective, if they have to go faster or not?
Well, there's lots of examples of companies that have done it. I may misquote the names, but I think Canva didn't raise a lot of money and there's been other ones right along the way that have not done it in the conventional, like you need lots of cash. I think you get into, as founders in SaaS, you get into a trap. Once I get this person, that'll be solved. And once we just do this, or if we spend that extra this, you know, people don't look at it the other way. It's like, oh, if I just spend that, it'll fix this and solve that. Versus, how do I pull it back the other way, mm-hmm. which is hard to do, mm-hmm. right? But like, you know, as well, like it takes 5-6 years with a good engineering team to build every feature your ICP or customer needs. That's a kind of given. And at the same time, it probably gets 4 years for most companies, other than exceptions, to even get known. So you've got to ride that bit out anyway. And whether you're at 1 million, 3 million, 5 million, whatever, I think it's your model. But like, it's very different if you've got a PLG to a hybrid version of that to an SLG. You know, PLG is harder to pull off. You can't control as much. SLG is expensive. You've got people. People are expensive. So, you know, there's a lot of things out there where they're mm-hmm. probably too cheap for having a sales-led motion. And then, you know, how do you counter that? So your price point's got to be good enough. The value's got to be good enough based on how much marketing, go-to-market dollars you need to support it, right? You know?
You mentioned that SaaS and software, maybe in general, has been in a recession kind of mode after COVID. And that's very true that, you know, we saw a peak actually in 2021. And then after COVID, and that was really the best probably, you know, multiples and valuations we saw for SaaS companies in the history of software and SaaS. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, then we saw the next phase that was almost a recession for SaaS companies. And now we are in a kind of environment that maybe is gradually getting out of that phase and is stabilizing from market perspective. Now, at the same time, we are talking about being cash positive, as you said, for SaaS companies. At the same time, we have this philosophy that Silicon Valley has that I'm going to provide a lot of funds to these companies that I start and I help them to get started. And that way they can capture the market because the other competitors are going not to really put that much funding behind the company and not taking that much risk. And while they are trying to be risk averse and very capital efficient, I start with these companies with almost unlimited funding, a lot more funding than anybody else. And then I will see I'm capturing the market, and the companies that started in Silicon Valley has used that recipe for a long time, that they go and then they grow much faster, maybe not capital efficient, but when they get the market, they can monetize at that point and maximize their kind of valuation because now they have the market, they are the market leader. How does it play for the rest of, you know, SaaS market that they wanted to really be capital efficient? As you said, it's better to play that game because most likely if you are amongst 90%, not 10%, or you are not outlier, then that's a safer play for a SaaS company.
Yeah, but I think 15 years ago, people would go, even when I first started raising Jimny, oh, there's already one player. We can't invest. Mm-hmm. Like, but you can have two or three. You can have a two and a three now, and the market's mm-hmm. grown. And there's more people buying. So 10, 12 years ago, people would go, oh, you know, there's one person who's got that market. You know, the total addressable market is huge and you're narrowing your ICP all the time, often. And again, it dependent on what problem you're solving and how it works. But the world's a small place in some worlds, in some ways, but very big in others. So, yeah, look, I guess it's one model to go and raise a load of money. But if you don't have the luxury of having connections and being in Silicon Valley and probably going to Stanford or whatever you need to do to people to think they've got to give you loads of money pre-seed, you know, then, you know, you have to maybe take a different approach. If you're in Asia or in Europe and you're in Africa, you know, you have to play to the strengths of that market. So they're niche, right? Like, for example, Europe and Asia, each country has its own way of doing things, not one standard. So you maybe dominate somewhere smaller and you become more profitable rather than trying to conquer the US out of the gate, you know. So I think it really depends on the business and the location, you know. It does make a big difference where you are in the world.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I just played a devil advocate in that room to just see what you say, but I get it. So I'm with you. So as an entrepreneur, you need to find a way to create success, and each company is different, and you may not necessarily want it to go and just, it's not the only way to succeed, to success, to raise a lot of money. And more importantly, if customers are happy, that's really number one indicator that you are on the right path. And as long as you can keep customers happy, that means you, you know, you have a product that fits the market and you have the needs in front of you to, you know, provide and cater to those needs.
Yeah, I also think people work it out. There's like product market fit is like, well, I would say we got to 600-700K and we didn't have of ARR and we still didn't have product market fit. You know, so, and it's not a number. It's like a feeling of how quickly it can fly and what you can do with it. And then you have pivots or you do M&A along the way. Like it's like a fit, I think, but you know, you've got to think of it. Like in life, I don't get too philosophy, you know, like whatever. But like we're always obsessed about who won, where's the finish line, who came first, who came second. You know, how can you be number one in your market? Well, when does the investors ask me that fucking stupid question? I say, well, when does the market finish then? Next month at 5 o'clock. So who's going to be number one at what point? Things goes up and come down. So I don't know. I just think you have to think with a more infinite mindset around where you can take it and what it can do. Probably the biggest mistake you can make is think short term all the time. If you from the top down, if a board and a business and everything is thinking more short term, then probably not as successful. You could say like Apple and Steve Jobs, he definitely had a vision of what would look like long term rather than short term, right? As an example.
No, that's very true. That's very true. Mm. All of these big companies couldn't be that big if they didn't have a long term vision and they were going after just short term vision quarter after quarter. So definitely timing works for them as well. But it's very obvious that they had that long-term vision. Otherwise, they could get lost very quickly and not getting to where they want.
Yeah, I think with everything, a lot of biz startups in SaaS fail because people give up. Like founders fall out or they think, oh, we've run out of money. If you can find a way to keep going, you can make it to that 1% and actually get to a significant number where it is like less than 1% or whatever. But, you know, I think that's just part of the journey that you kind of go on. Overall, it's what you start with and the idea and the vision that you have very rarely is where it ends up. Like it's about the mission. Is it bigger than the product? It was just about the product and outcomes. So a lot of companies, I build this because I want to retire and be rich, or I'm on a mission to do this and we're going to solve that problem and we'll get the result we'll get to, you know. If you worry about, even in sales, you talk about sales background, if someone's worrying about their commission all the time and they're worrying about that individual deal, if you just worry about giving the customer a great experience and, you know, closing all deals, everything else will come with it. You'll be successful, you hit your quota, you'll get commission. You worry about the wrong things, then the outcome ends up being wrong often. You know?
Yeah, very good point. Yeah. Very good point. So but those kind of, you know, lower level goals will be accomplished if you have the right vision, and you will get the, like sales you mentioned, the salesperson will get the commission. But if that's the goal, it makes it harder and may jeopardize some other things like customer experience, for example, or what about the business success? And if you're just maximizing your commission for this quarter, but the business is going to get hurt overall, then you are actually shooting in your feet. So like everything else, you know, you can really have a better long-term goal that satisfies the short-term goal, but also it paves the way for longer term kind of path and journey.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I think going back to, you know, whether someone ends up being successful because they progress through their career or a company ends up at a higher place, you have to have hard work and resilience and all of that stuff. But there is an element of timing and good luck. With I've got this product that works at this time that enough people can believe in to become early adopters. So, you know, lots of very bright people create companies, and timing and luck plays a part in everything, you know, as well.
There's one question that I have to ask. This is a special kind of period of time with SaaS. And you already have mentioned that a couple of times when you either spoke on other topics, and that's AI. And AI is kind of something that you may, you know, see it as a shiny object. Again, people are just going after a new shiny object because it's just new and it's shiny. Or you may see it as a kind of, some people look at it as a kind of revolutionary, as something that it will change everything. It's the new operating system. You have heard of a lot of, I mean, I was in a presentation yesterday in Austin, and the idea was that how it would become the new operating system for everything we do, and how really it will change the way we as kind of software guys are going to live in the future. So what's your take on it in a short term, meaning 3 to 5 years from now, and the impact that it might have for SaaS companies, including your own company, the way it will kind of change it? Is it a feature? Is it a new kind of foundation? Is it going to be evolutionary, or is it going to be revolutionary?
I think it's more, I would go more, to answer your question succinctly, I'd go more on the revolutionary, like as in it's like when the internet started, like for me, and we're just at the start of the journey. So I think we're very lucky in that we have a lot of structured data and unstructured data, and we sit on a treasure trove. So I think there's a lot of SaaS businesses out there that maybe they were a learning management system and they're sitting around going, God, how do we do AI? Yeah. Whereas we've always had forms of machine learning at Gemini, so it's easy for us to transition into a different form of machine learning. But yeah, look, we see it coming through in marketing already. It's like, how did you hear about us? You know, one of the sources needs to be ChatGPT. It's like, oh, I searched for top 10, blah, blah, blah on ChatGPT. So I think there's a productivity layer to it, which is first. There's the new way in which people search and interact, like personal sales assistant. But yeah, how people build off it. Yeah, I think it's like internet level disruption to the way that we do everything, you know.
Great. It was great having you, Tom, on this show. And I wanted to ask you if you could share a book that either personally or professionally you liked.
Yeah, of course. We talked a little bit about like having more of an infinite mindset and stuff like that. So before I started my company, when I was living in New York, I read Simon Sinek's Start With Why. I think, you know, you can relate a lot to it in terms of like even how you present your company, like why are we here? How does it work? What do we do? So that was a very inspirational book for me. But actually, he has other books, and he has one called The Infinite Game. But a little bit like I referred to it earlier, is like you have a chess match or you have a football match, and there's an outcome, there's a final whistle, and I win, you lose, I win, right? But business isn't like that, politics isn't like that, and you have to play a different game. But I think it's a very interesting read for any kind of people in SaaS generally trying to build their career or a founder. Is like, I think some of the biggest mistakes that people make is they think too short term. I'll take the paycheck rather than working for that founder with that opportunity. I'll take the most money. Yeah, I get it. But I think there's something to do with thinking more infinitely about what you're creating, what mission you have. You know, that's fantastic. That's my share. Yeah, and I don't read I don't read very much either, so I listen to it. So it's an audio book for me. But there you go.
Yep, it's likewise here as well. So, okay, great. Thank you very much, Tom, for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Armin. Great. Bye.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armin Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at Qrvey.com. That's Qrvey.com.